Welcome to another Storage Unpacked podcast. I'm Chris Evans. Today we're discussing the subject of data protection using the public cloud. And we're joined by Jaspreet Singh, founder and CEO of Druva. Jaspreet, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself and your company?
Good morning, Chris. Thanks a lot for having me on the podcast today. My name is Jaspreet Singh. I founded Druva about 7 to 8 years ago. Druva is a leader in cloud data protection and information management. We leverage public cloud to not only protect information critical to a business, but also bring out the good value on sides of GRC or rediscovery by having data searchable and mineable and stuff like that. So I'm glad to be on the podcast with you today and discuss the topic of public cloud for data protection.
Now, traditionally, backup and more specifically data protection was a process that was done on-site, typically to tape media, but we did evolve to start using disk-based backup systems. And obviously now we see the public cloud as being adopted as a great target for backup and, of course, for recovering services in the event of a disaster. And that's obviously what you're focused on. Let's get into some of the issues around why we'd actually use public cloud compared to what we do traditionally. What are the reasons why people might start looking at public cloud as a target for backup or data protection compared to what they would have done in the past?
I think there are two or three core broad reasons to leverage public cloud. Obviously, the simpler ones are, you know, all the RAS aspects, the reliability, scalability, availability of a solution, where public cloud makes a lot more sense than traditional infrastructure. But also there's a core aspect of bringing out the value of your data. Right. If you look at data protection and you mentioned tape media and disk media, you look at 20 years ago, the core notion of data protection was to do recovery. Right. The resiliency of data was the most important thing. I think over a period of time, resiliency of the core infrastructure improved. You had virtualization, you had better hardware. But now an incident happens. It's not only the resiliency which matters. If it's like the Last Supper, right? Who's on the table when an incident happens? The incident happens, you have the security guy pulling in saying, do I have to do a breach notification for GDPR purposes? You know, you have your forensics guys or your e-discovery guys saying, is this an incident pertinent to a use case or my custodian, which is a particular lawsuit we're fighting? So there are a lot more people involved when an incident happens today than just your backup admin. And historically, when we had looked at building a data protection strategy, we only optimize it for backup and recovery and build a process for forensics or security or e-discovery separately. But moving this particular workload of data protection to cloud, you have a lot more visibility into data. You can build workflows which leverage this information which you've captured through a backup process for different functions to look at their own meaningful information. And obviously, there's some downsides also of doing this. With all the goodness of cloud and reliability, scalability, extensibility of data, the downside happens to be that there's a big gap between your core infrastructure and the cloud. It's still a big bandwidth gap. So in some situations where you have a lot more information distributed, like you have a lot more remote sites, endpoints, smaller data centers, cloud makes a lot more economical sense. When you have a high density of data in one data center, then cloud economies are tougher to justify. But as more and more enterprises are getting more distributed, we are seeing cloud adoption increasing dramatically.
You've touched on some very interesting points, which I over the course of the discussion we'll go over. And we'll park a couple of those for later. And that's the idea of what else you can do with this data. But you've touched on a very interesting one very initially there. And that's the idea of the way that people have done backup in the past and the way that we do it now. So when I was involved in backup, which is quite a while ago, although I did do quite a lot of it, we tended to have lots of issues around how we manage that physical infrastructure and how we actually grew it with the growth of production data. So typically we saw issues around being able to actually just manage things like the media and so on. It sounds to me like a lot of those sort of things are being taken away, and I would imagine from an operational perspective, that's a big benefit for a lot of customers.
I think so. I think public cloud offers a completely different enterprise stack. Right. You have the building blocks are different. From a block, you're going to an object. From a media server, you're going to a very big metadata management system. So when your building blocks change, you have to look at systems differently. The way we build our architecture is extremely scalable, reliable, available. So there's no capacity issues. You don't run out of your disk space or your dedup indexes. You don't have to do tape shipping. Your data in cloud is three-way replicated if you do it properly. You don't have to think about off-siting or, you know, media restores. Everything is available for you to pull down using a browser. So this modern architecture takes away all the complexity, risk, and cost of a very, very highly inefficient system built over the years. You end up buying a backup software, a backup hardware, a tiering service, a shipping service, a verification service. All those can be consolidated very, very seamlessly in the public cloud.
There's some really interesting pieces there that we're getting into some real depths with. So the fact that traditional services, you would back up and you would write that data into a backup environment, but you'd still have some very highly available metadata engine or database you'd have to keep in there, potentially we're not having to be as rigorous because we can push some of that to the cloud. Is that what you're implying?
So yes, I think if you break down the whole backup job, right, you have a highly available media server, which does the cataloging and indexing of data. Then you have available disk media, which does your retention for a month or 2 months. And then you have the tape media for long-term cheaper retention, still being indexed or cataloged in your central catalog. Then you have a shipping service, tiering service to do an off-siting. So between all these services, you have three or four different classes of hardware. You have two or three different classes of software, and you have a system to manage and do. And this doesn't cover anything to do with calling data back. If you have to call data back and index it for a use case, then you have to look at Microsoft Search Cluster integration. You'd look at a GRC process and the whole nine yards. Now, you think about a cloud process, right? You think about a cloud process where it's very, very hard to build because you're completely re-engineering your technology over the last 30 years in the public cloud. But if you do it well, you get automatic three copies of data. You get automatic hot, warm, and cold storage. Given the different kinds of storage, S3, Glacier, you can have different classes of storage. You can instrument a disaster recovery very, very quickly by booting your data in the cloud immediately. And there's no media service to manage because the data is automatically cataloged by us in the cloud. So your four class of hardware, your two or three class of software, your GRC implementation, all those can be abstracted by a simple SLA that's consistent across the globe and the same price guarantee across the globe. CIO, which is wants to mitigate risk by going into a disaster recovery project, it's a big deal that a project completes in time. It completes same SLAs across the globe.
You touched on one of the pieces as well. You just mentioned across the globe there. You touched on one of the pieces I hadn't really considered about cloud backup, and that's the fact that if you look at a traditional enterprise that might run one or two data centers, the backup methodology might be to backup from one location to another, and even cross backup if you were lucky enough to have the money to buy two data centers and backup across those two locations. But you mentioned earlier about companies who may be more distributed in their current deployments, and they might have services that are running in individual offices, or they might have remote offices or branches. And the cloud sounds like a great way of being able to say, if I've got a disparate environment, I can back up a lot more readily than I could do if I was trying to back up into a core data center.
Well, absolutely. So in some cases, it makes tremendous sense when you have data needs. Your data centers are very distributed. You don't run off one core data center because the teams are distributed. You have multiple locations, or you have data being restored or needed in multiple locations. There are customers like us, like a very well-known customer, NASA. They had to make their Mars rover images available in Colorado, where their main JPL unit was in Southern California. Now, in a usual case, they would back up this system from different locations, from the field, and then make tapes available and ship them to a location where they would be tested. Now, given a cloud, the accessibility of data improves dramatically. Anyone can log in and get the data they want. And also, the data protection element, the data collection elements becomes a lot more centralized as well. So there's huge value if you can give the same quality of service, which the business was used to in their hardware software model. If you can replicate the same quality of service in the cloud, there's huge benefits. Historically, people did not get those quality of services in the cloud. They were getting either not so polished solutions or very consumer-like solutions in the cloud. But the merits of an enterprise-grade solution delivered from cloud is tremendous.
So let's talk about some of the negatives then, because in a traditional model, you might have really pretty good control over security. If you choose to encrypt your data, you might manage your own keys, et cetera, et cetera. I would imagine that there are a number of issues that you have to think about slightly differently. So security is a good example.
I think there are some interesting challenges and opportunities, and then there's some limitations as well. And I'll be transparent about both of them. And it's like the early days of virtualization. Right, there was a virtualization which takes off in test and dev. Then the last application people wanted to virtualize was the Exchange service. So likewise for cloud, certain workloads make most sense, and then some other workloads may still have to wait for the future. So the security and encryption is actually less of an issue because they are actually very advanced methods of achieving what you call extensive key management. There are solutions like KMS in the cloud, like Amazon KMS, where the customer can manage its own keys in the cloud and even rotate them. There are also encryption gateways available where you can integrate with them and you can do key management on-prem using your SafeNet box, using the Amazon service. There are virtual private clouds where you have a dedicated IPsec tunnel to your cloud instance, and we can piggyback on that tunnel. So those are the security and compliance is not of that dramatic an issue. In fact, the controls we found in the cloud are actually better than data center. The opportunity and challenges lie in the physical difference between the cloud and the on-prem. If you have all the data sitting in on-prem, how would you send that all over physical networks or distributed disks to the cloud? Is what we are trying to overcome over a period of time, right? We build what we call the world's best dedupe in the cloud to cut down some transmit of data, a scalable dedupe in the cloud. We're trying to integrate with what's called Fast Connect or Direct Connect, where customers buy a very cheap bandwidth to cloud, but it's dedicated to a public cloud vendor, not to internet. We're also trying to integrate with the shipment of disks offline called Snowball and other things.
Right. Yeah, of course. Okay. I mean, they're interesting in the idea, I guess, of archive. I would imagine the only thing with using something like that for backup is it smacks of traditional off-siting, which I guess a lot of people would hope they were avoiding. But it sounds to me you're saying that there are ways to get around the bandwidth issues that customers may have.
I think there are ways evolving. It depends on the size of data. If you have a petabyte of data, I would recommend that you still go on-prem backup and recovery solution. But if you have a few hundred terabyte of data, I think cloud is becoming more and more viable.
Is that the sweet spot for the sort of customers you see then, that few hundred terabyte model?
I think so. I think as of today, that's the sweet spot you're going after. All the sweet spot is increasing year on year. Or it's also a few hundred terabytes per location. Let me correct that. So if you have a few thousand or tens of thousand endpoints, no problem. If you have 600 different we have a customer with 600 different locations. They're a hospital chain, and they have 600 plus hospitals across the U.S. Cloud, no problem. A few terabyte in each location doesn't matter, right? If you have a petabyte in a single location, then it's a challenge. So distributed data is obviously a lot better. But the way bandwidth is increasing, the way more direct connects have been deployed, we have a customer who's piloting right now a few hundred terabytes per location, going to a petabyte per location. And maybe in next year or two, we have a different threshold. But the threshold also keeps on going higher and higher down the line.
How are customers seeing the issue of compliance? Because obviously backing up into a public cloud that's potentially shared with other people. Yes, I know we've got security to get around that. We can do our own key management and so on. People always talk about compliance being an issue. But in reality, is that just is that talk, or are people just getting around that?
I think compliance and security is very well solved in the cloud, in my opinion. I think what's changing is how IT teams and security teams have been used to a process they closely watched versus holding a vendor responsible for the SLAs. And how do you build that trust? And it's very important. I'm not undermining the value of this process because, think about from an IT perspective or a security guy's perspective, right? One of your employees walks into the office with Google glasses on, right? How do you make sure they're not recording something they're not supposed to record? So any new process which you introduce in the company, in any mature enterprise, has to come with set of policies and procedures each individual has to follow. And a cloud vendor is no different. Now, the question is the enterprise ready to adopt a process where they are making the outside vendor accountable and responsible for certain SLAs and security procedures, which they always could influence their internal teams more tightly with? So that's a mind shift change. Cloud is compliant. It's the understanding of what questions to ask in a security process to determine the right guys or the wrong guys, and then continuously following it.
You've raised a good point there in the fact that I think a lot of people still could be thinking that cloud vendors are not compliant, don't meet compliance rules. But in actual fact, I personally probably think that's still a bit of a myth, that in fact the cloud vendors are probably more secure and better operating than people's data centers themselves.
I think not all cloud are born equal. I've also seen cloud vendors which are scary as hell. And let me be honest, not all cloud are born equal. And also, not all security processes in enterprise are mature enough to adapt a third-party solution. I think the cloud does bring tremendous value, but your security team has to be ready to know how they even question a process like this and be able to decipher a good cloud from a bad cloud. See, public cloud by its language means that you're riding a bus with a bunch of people who you don't know about. So you have to have strong internal processes to introduce a process like this. This is why I have a good, I respect what enterprises are going through. And in Drova, we partner with them to show them, okay, what should you ask a vendor like us? And let us actually show you more information means more transparency. Let us show you all our controls and policies to give you a good level of confidence. So you don't wait for the enterprise to ask those questions.
That's a good point. And I think we'll move on in a second, but I think that's a good point just to finish that section on. And that's if you are a customer coming to any backup or data protection provider, asking the right questions, making sure there's plenty of transparency, making sure that they can answer all of your questions is obviously a very key point. And you've just, I guess, demonstrated that from your perspective.
Absolutely.
From where we've got them, we know there's some positives and negatives. We know cloud suits certain types of environments, perhaps better than others. But let's start digging into how people are actually backing up. And I see three types of solution. And you can tell me whether you think this is true or not. And we'll see if we can expand on that. I see one where people might just back up data only, just using the cloud as a repository. I see the idea of people picking up an app and their data as a VM and backing that up. And then I see people who actually take that entire VM or application and would completely reinstance that application in the cloud. How do you think what people are doing? Is it those models? Or is there more than that? Am I sort of summarizing that a bit short there?
It's very close. I think there are two dimensions of cloud backup, right? One is what you backup, and then second is like what does cloud backup even mean to you, right? And in what you backup, I think the common data people are considering are absolutely right, VM images, because VM images offer a lot of value in not just backup but cloud DR and being able to orchestrate a complete recovery of your images rather than just backup. Second is the end user data, be it on endpoints or cloud applications. That's getting tremendous value because it's cloud is very well suited there. Third is that cloud is getting a lot of traction for remote sites. Right? How do you manage your remote sites, which are the new kind of endpoint for your cloud? And I would say fourth is your cloud archival. I have this massive amount of data, which I rarely use. Can I use cloud for an archival point of view? So a replacement for my large NAS boxes, but managing the whole process in the cloud. That's what you backup. And then in terms of second dimension of how people are leveraging cloud, there are multiple notions. Some people are considering using the existing backup software and using cloud as a replacement for tapes. Second set of people are more forward-looking and saying, if I do that, I will never be able to benefit from the true use of cloud. So let me rip and replace and put for what information makes the most sense, let me buy a solution purely in the cloud. So that's how I would summarize these two viewpoints of what is being backed up and how people leveraging cloud.
What about SaaS applications? Obviously, I think a lot of people might not realize that if you go to a SaaS provider, they'll not provide you necessarily DR, but they'll only give you the ability to get your data back to where it was if they have a hardware error or something like that. They won't necessarily recover in the instance of data corruption. So do you see a lot of SaaS applications being backed up, or do you think people haven't quite realized that yet?
I think a lot of people still quite haven't realized that yet. There's a lot of misinformation. And this is a great point you raised. This actually goes back to our starting of our podcast when you said why people need backup, right? There were two core reasons for people to do backup. One was resiliency, recovering your data very, very quickly. Second was your retention management and the whole GRC process. Can I get my data back in case of a subpoena, in case of a need or a mass, distribution or whatever, right? So I think the SaaS application, I think people are very comfortable with the providers offering a very highly resilient solution in the cloud. And I kind of agree with that. But I think what's been overlooked are other aspects of why backup is needed. I'll give you a couple of examples which are sort of more prevalent in the cloud than ever in the usual software and hardware. For example, if there's a ransomware impact, if there's a ransomware impact on your cloud application or your desktop application, which impacts cloud, Then the recoverability from a ransomware, which is actually encrypting or wiping or deleting your data, becomes a lot more trickier in the traditional SaaS environment. You have the new age problem of cloud malware, where someone of your end user signs up with what they think is DocuSign, but was actually a third-party malware application, which gets access to your account and starts deleting data. And then you have all the retention needs of a user where in an M&A process or hostile takeover, the users start deleting data, which your cloud vendors cannot guarantee against. And then the fourth part is when actually you need data, how fast can you recover? Most of these SaaS applications are driven to, you know, give you a 1 GB per hour kind of a download. But your subpoena requests, your disaster recovery requests may actually need a much higher SLAs to recover information. So the dynamics of data protection are massively changing when it comes to cloud data. And people still haven't realized the actual use cases and needs, and only when they get impacted do they realize. We've been lucky to get some really, really nice customers in SaaS application data protection. And actually now seeing that people who are not just SaaS, but also buying infrastructure in the cloud, like Amazon EC2 instances or Azure instances, are facing similar challenges. So data born in the cloud will have very interesting, very compelling data protection challenges.
So let's just touch on that. That's a really interesting area to think about. So I've seen people who said, if I create an application that runs in the cloud, runs in EC2, uses S3 for data or even EFS or something like that, I mean, it doesn't have to all be Amazon, it could be in Azure as well. But if I'm using one cloud provider, I can still back up to that same cloud provider because their infrastructure is potentially resilient and therefore I shouldn't be worried about that. Now, I personally think that sounds a bit dubious and I'd rather back up to another cloud provider, but I can't imagine at the moment that's a particularly easy thing to do.
It's not easy today, and that's a problem Dhruva is trying to solve in the near future. But I think somewhere the customer is right that the data is perceived to be resilient. One reason to move data to cloud is data to be more resilient. But what they're missing out is the notion of human errors, right? Who controls the snapshot on the EC2 box? The storage guy, the EC2 guy, or the application guy? And who's responsible for retention? The same person or a different person? And what retention they have to follow? The GFS or a standard retention, and is the cloud provider giving the same retention, and the immutability of retention is guaranteed or not. So when you understand that resiliency is not the only reason you do a backup, you have retention needs, you have separation of duties, you have visibility, you have compliance needs, you have auditability needs, is exactly when you start wondering about, is my cloud native snapshotting is enough for that workload versus I actually need a backup. Just like in the VMware world, snapshotting wasn't always enough. The backup guys always felt like, take my data outside this building. Do whatever you feel like. Those are the use cases we start seeing emerging. We have some very, very good early customers working with us to solve some of these challenges. And at some point, I can talk more about them.
I think that's an interesting angle, that it might not be the technology that the cloud provider actually has that might not be multi-resilient. You might find that with a small number of staff, you might actually have the same person covering the same thing. And if that one person makes a mistake in two places or something like that, then you could have an issue with both your data and your backup. That's an interesting angle, I think, to look at it from.
And there are more angles like these. At some point, we can talk more about this. But yeah, the separation of duties between data protection and the primary application provider is historically been true and probably will be true in future as well.
Okay, let's talk about metrics and dashboards and how we look at this stuff. I've done a number of pieces of work in the past where I've looked at how we take data out of the backup environment and how we throw that into tools that help us report or something that lets us do tracking or metrics that measure how successful backups have been and throughput and a million and one different things we try to do to measure the environment. How is that changing with backup to the cloud, if it is at all? And are we producing different metrics? Do we need new technology to report on that? How is it changing, do you think?
I think this gets a lot more interesting in the cloud because the customer actually, you know, obviously the rightful way demands that, since the core reason for cloud is better visibility. So customers have been asking us auditability of data that show us if an application of particular tier has met the SLAs the legal team set for, and which they had never visibility into because of different systems and different media servers and stuff like that. Then there is a understanding of dormancy of data that show us which applications are more dormant than others. Can you separate them too? And so we can allocate resources accordingly. Then there's a whole notion of unstructured data. Show us what applications are there, what kind of data is there, what is the size of data, aging of data, which should be kept or disposed. And then it slowly starts to merge into the whole GRC conversation and GDPR conversation. Which data should we not be having? Can you purge some information because more information is actually more risk now? Or which information should be retained more often? And how many copies should we have of that data? So all those becomes very interesting points to discuss with customers. And when you ask a customer, and not all of these have Dhruva solved so far. These are all the challenges which we are looking to solve and working the customer with. But even if you ask a customer, right, that what's your dream about cloud backup? I mean, one of the customers said, I open a ServiceNow ticket to create a VM, and then it should just automatically get backed up, completely invisible, right? The same ServiceNow ticket should also integrate with the backup provider or through vCenter and just do the backup in the cloud. And likewise, a ServiceNow ticket should just do DR. But then you question the customer, like, who manages the backup schedule, and how do you really manage your backup schedule if bandwidth is a core bottleneck? So which is where now, interestingly, customers are saying, can you actually use machine learning to tell us what are the better backup schedules given the kind of application, dormancy and non-dormancy, type of data, type of SLAs and everything else. So there's a very interesting need to build very solid visualization on the data set you're capturing. Because secondary data is the right point of interjection of all these metrics and data points, not the primary. And obviously, Dhruva has solved some. We have a very deep analytics suite, which customers can leverage, but a lot still is yet to be solved.
Right. So there's two sections there. So let's divide it into two, because I see one side that says, if I'm a customer internally of the IT organization who's now moved to the cloud, I may have started to get used to the idea of provisioning a VM or a container on demand. Now I want to see my backup as a service being offered to me internally in the same way. I want to know that if I do backup a VM, it is backed up and when and how. So I want visualization of that as a customer internally. And then there's another side you mentioned there, which is that back-end analysis that the admins still need to do, where they look at it and say, here's all the bandwidth and resources and scheduling I still need to do. So are you splitting that in two? Are you exporting that data from your platform into some environment that allows the customer to see that data without having to talk to the backup admin?
So we're doing both. I think that's a great point. I think the first part is what we've already solved or still solving and evolving very, very well, which is visibility into SLAs. Did this particular retention job or backup job meet the SLAs, which is supposed to be met or being set forward for by data protection team or the legal team or whatever? That's one part of the equation. And is that particular thing auditable and defensible if there's a particular compliance request? That's one part of it. Second part of it is exactly what you said, is how do we build a level of intelligence in the software? So some situations can be better managed about choosing the right SLAs, choosing the right level of resources, or triggering the right kind of alert, right? If you see ransomware, can you alert anomaly in data pattern? I think those are the challenges we are solving in the near future. You'll see some announcements from us in the near future where we are looking at machine learning very, very aggressively to see how can we solve. And also knowing the fact that we can't solve everything. So can we offload some of our activity logs and everything to a Splunk-like system for customer to manage their level of anomaly detection or any kind of changes and patterns in that data set?
Yeah, I think that would have been typically quite hard in backup environments. I know that with the traditional tools I've used, you would have no chance of being able to identify anomalies in the backup data to highlight things like the chance that you might have ransomware in a system, or you might have some other sorts of nefarious things going on in the background. I think that perhaps that's one of a significant benefit of being able to use cloud, is that those things possibly just couldn't be done in the traditional environment.
Yeah, people just hugged their hardwares, right? They didn't want any of the team to touch the hardware. They just wanted their own software and hardware teams to use them. But cloud opens the possibility that you can, you know, incrementally, slowly, just keep on doing and evolving more with data set. And you don't have to upgrade a firmware sitting in a hardware.
Let's move on then. Let's talk about probably one of the bits that I found most interesting in the idea of cloud, and that's the fact that if we're going to use public cloud as a backup target, then there's a perfectly obvious use case where we actually restore our application in the public cloud and we start using it there. Now, clearly there's a number of different issues around how you do that, not least of which is things like networking and application latency, but even just something as simple as being able to image a VM backup when it's come from, say, a VMware environment, and now you want to run it in EC2. So how are people doing that, do you think? And I think you offer that as a feature, but how is that being managed, and how is that those sort of issues being addressed?
I think in general, DR has been a very expensive proposition in the past, where you had to hire a secondary hardware, secondary software, dedicated replication links, and the whole nine yards. And that was always separate from backup, because backup systems were very tape-driven or high-density disk-driven, not really high availability-driven. So people had three different systems, DR, backup, and then long-term archival. So Druva is merging them, especially in our Phoenix product line, very, very closely, that when you backup images, if you choose to get a DR add-on, they are automatically converted to an AMI, the Amazon equivalent of VMDKs. And we push the AMIs into the customer account. So customer gets these multiple AMIs of the same VM as the backup completes in its own account. We also then tie up the tough part about DR is the login credentials of VMs is login password, and login credential for AMI is actually keys, SSL keys. So, and then how do you map the networking? How do you map the security groups in the whole nine yards? So we do a very clean mapping of VPCs and security groups and domain names to actually make sure the DR service is commodity. You can absolutely take any image and boot in the cloud. Obviously, the conversion between VMDK and AMI takes a bit of time, but it's the cost benefit of this is like 1:1,000, because you don't have a secondary data center, secondary rack space, secondary hardware storage. You have simple, cheap AMIs pushed to your cloud, and you can boot them whenever you want. And there's a high customer demand for it, and they are testing and seeing how do they leverage this for DR or data migration. That said, the VMware announcement on AWS makes actually things a lot more better for us, because now you have the same quality of VM, the enterprise-grade virtual instances now can be, can you put in the cloud. You have the entire vSAN suite in the cloud, so you can take the VM and simply push those as either AMIs or VMDK to the customer account.
That's an interesting thought. So the way that I've seen the AWS VMware partnership being discussed is the fact that you would go to them as a customer and say, give me some compute capacity, the equivalent of EC2. I want to run my VMware environment in the cloud, and you'd be able to do that. Now, I haven't seen much around how the data would get there, but I hadn't thought of it in terms of how it would improve your ability to do backup restore, because clearly there's a huge benefit, as you said, for you, because now you haven't got to do that VM conversion process. You haven't got to manage all of that overhead. You just simply just instance it in that vSphere in the cloud environment.
And after we create the instance, we can continue to backup the instance. So if you want to bring it back to your private cloud, you can do that. And the very likely use of VMware in the public cloud is going to be enterprise-grade application, not DevOps workloads. And when people have enterprise-grade application in the cloud, they will worry a lot more about resiliency and version control than the DevOps workload, which are predominantly so far being the most value in the cloud. So that will increase the probability of someone building resiliency and even mobility of these workloads between public cloud and private cloud. Because most data was in private cloud and most investment was in private cloud, the epicenter for data protection was in the private cloud. But as the data actually leaves the data center, goes to public cloud, goes to SaaS application endpoints, the epicenter itself of data protection has to shift from on-prem to cloud to be able to solve all these things we talked about today.
That's a really interesting scenario, because I've been looking at it and thinking, why would VMware allow Amazon to run applications on their behalf? Because the one obvious thing is that very quickly people could move across to using AWS directly and not use VMware any longer. However, there's a real scenario that says customers might choose to not do that at all, because keeping it on VMware on-premise and in the cloud means that they don't have any issues with data mobility in terms of backup and restore. You know, they can very much more easily move that application back and forth for recovery or whatever, and therefore they might choose not to leap into AWS simply because it could make their whole processes more complicated.
Got it.
That's an interesting model. So what do people typically do in your environment in terms of if it wasn't, imagine we're not talking about the VMware environment, if they're just going into AWS, how would they normally bring their data back after a recovery event?
So today, the way the process works in Druva solution is that when they start running the application in the cloud, at some point when they wish to go back, we take a snapshot of the running AMI and then use the vCenter integration to bring the AMI snapshot back into the vCenter. So there's an export process in Druva, which does export an AMI snapshot back into VMDK. But this whole conversion to and fro does take time. There's a limitation also on how many conversions you can run in parallel and stuff like that. But I think all those will slowly start to go away, especially when we have VMware running natively in the AWS. The time to conversion goes away. The flexibility of running a VM between vCenter and AWS sort of becomes more seamless.
Let's move on to our final topic, and I think this is probably one that sums a lot of this stuff up for customers, and that's if they're currently using traditional backup today, how do they look at moving to measure whether cloud backup is more beneficial for them? And I think we've talked about some of the potential soft benefits, but I imagine there must be some hard benefits as well, you know, in terms of the savings of software, possibly changing their operational model a little bit and not buying, not spending on CapEx and so on. What do you see in terms of how people typically look at the TCO and measure the benefit of moving to a cloud environment?
I think so. That's a great question. I think every conversation around data protection always evolves a TCO and ROI model. So we do actually extensive TCO with the customers where we bring up that, you know, what software they use, what hardware do they use, and how many different locations and the processes you do offsiting and the manpower costs and everything else. And in most cases, as I said, if this nature of data is distributed, then completely centralized and extremely optimized, you see tremendous value in cloud. And the TC calculator is very, very powerful and actually public on a website now, where a customer can play with it and then get a custom TCO made for them for this project to be approved by, you know, the team or the higher authorities, and be finding great success in that.
Right, so you've got something on your website. I'll link to that, but you've got a TCO calculator on your website they can use themselves.
Absolutely, and it's a little bit simplified form to say what kind of data you have, retention periods and stuff like that. But I think when you build in-person TCOs with enterprises, it's a pretty detailed version where the web is a simplified part of that. And between the multiple class of hardware, the shipping costs and the software, a lot of efficiencies to be found when you sort of start integrating them into a single software stack. And the more features you need from a data protection solution, like when you start converging silos between DR and archival and backup and GRC and GDPR, right, the more benefits the cloud starts to offer.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting angle, because I would see a lot of people looking at it and saying, well, we could do e-discovery search, all those sort of compliance and other features, and perhaps there's an opportunity to sell on that angle as well as just purely a cost center for backup and recovery.
Exactly. You can go broad in saying a cost center for backup and recovery, and then you can, you know, your coach or partner on the customer side to say, let's ask your enterprise. Typically, a lot of time, these departments don't talk to each other on what's their data collection strategy, how they're going to solve GDPR, how they're going to solve e-discovery challenges. And when you bridge those gaps and say, you know what, we can create a dedicated login for your legal team, dedicated login for your data protection officer, and we've seen tremendous uptick in our solution being adopted by multiple departments, which are all influencing the event than just the backup app.
Okay, brilliant. Well, do you know what? This has been a great conversation, Jaspreet. I really appreciate you coming on the podcast and spending some time talking about the whole idea of cloud and backup as a very interesting area, I think, for where not just data protection, but where people can take it further. And I think some of the points we've talked about today, we should definitely think about getting you to come back and we can dig into more detail, because we've raised some interesting points I haven't thought about before, and they'll be great to dig out and use in future blog posts and so on. Just as we wrap up, where can people find you online? Do you want to give the name of the company, your Twitter handle, and how can people stalk you?
Absolutely. So, you know, online is all about stalking. So they can obviously find Druva at druva.com. All the resources, we produce tons of content, great videos for customers who self-educate. We strongly believe most companies who talk to us have already been educated on the solution and the problem statement. So we put a lot out there. So please go and take a look. You can absolutely find me on Twitter at Jaspreet is my handle. And obviously Druva Inc. is the Druva handle. And we are on Facebook. We can be reached on a simple phone call. So very easy to stalk us.
Okay, that's great, Jaspreet. And thanks everybody for listening, and join us again on another podcast.